Just a minute. Hold it, please. Hold it, Mickey. That one we can't use today because we're back to 1945. This is the last program in this series. And in 1945, when we started, Hank Silverne, the late Hank Silverne, was our leader. And we had a theme song, which Remo recalled for me today. I had forgotten completely that what we used back there was a thing called Chasing Shadows. Will you play it, boys? How did it go? I've forgotten. Chasing Shadows. I can't imagine why I chose it. If I did, maybe somebody else did for me. Chasing shadows, chasing love dreams in vain, while my heart keeps on singing just a lonely refrain. That certainly wasn't me in those days. I don't know where in the world it came from. So this is our last program. And following the idea of Ann Stahl, the lovely advertising executive in Ohio, we have come back the last 27 days through the years backwards. Actually, yesterday's program completed the 27 years. Today, April the 30th, would be the first day of the 28th year. And I've thought a million things. Oh, Lordy, I've been thinking all week about things I wanted to say. But there's so little time, so I can only do a very few things. Many times I have been urged to write the story. I haven't done it for two reasons. One, I've never thought it really mattered that much. And two, there has been no time. But now there is time. There will be from now on. I hope there will be. And in deep retrospect, the career has been such a fantastic series of illogical, incredible events that I'm beginning to think maybe it would be worthwhile. Our sponsor, remember the old biblical saying, "The first shall be last." Lipton Tea stayed with us right to the very end. Lipton Tea is with us today. The Lipton Company. They didn't start with us in 45, but they did come, let's see, they took over the Talent Scout show about 47 or 48, somewhere in there. And they've been with us on and off ever since. I know that you know as well as I do the quality of Lipton Tea. All I beg of you is to take advantage of that. When you buy Lipton tea, you're going to pay a premium price for it. That's not cheapest tea on the market. And when you make it, for heaven's sakes, make it in such manner that you will get the quality for which you paid. All you have to do is use boiling hot water. That's all. Use a tea bag, if you will. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. The flow-through tea bag was designed so that you can get the same steeping qualities to within an inch of it, a hair of it, as you could if you were using the tea leaves as in the old days. Because this flow-through tea bag, not that it provides more tea, but it provides more wetting surface. But the thing is to get the cup hot, pour some boiling water in it, let it sit for a minute. Then dump that out, put the Lipton flow-through tea bag in the cup, and pour boiling hot water on it. Let it sit there as you watch the color. You know, you'll learn how strong you want it. Then take it out and serve it with cream and sugar, with lemon, with milk, just as I use it, or just as it is. And you've got the finest cup of tea in the world. And I can never thank Lipton Tea enough for the confidence they've had in me all through these years. The name Lipton and tea is, to coin an old cliche, like sterling on silver. I've been proud to represent them. Now, in order to understand this career, you have to realize that the last thing I ever had on my mind was stardom when I started out. It never occurred to me that I would be a star ever, any time. I just wanted to be the man who did the best job of doing whatever he was assigned to do. Whether it was describing a parade or a football game or announcing for a program or whatever it was in the beginning. And they gave me the early morning chore of playing the records and telling the time. And it was just that I tried to make it entertaining. It never occurred to me that there would be any such thing as stardom connected with it. A star to me was... Why, I'm still starry-eyed about those guys out in Hollywood. And you probably know that I have never fraternized with them to any extent. I know one or two of them, but never intimately, except in one or two very, very rare instances. I don't go to nightclubs. I don't hang around the Lambs Club with the boys for no reason except that our pursuits, our interests have never been the same. I have always been interested in doing what I thought would appeal to those who listened. It occurred to me that the only way you could achieve any longevity in our business was to grow in stature, to grow in interest. And so I tried to learn many different things, and to learn all about a lot of different things, so that I could speak with some sort of authority about them, or at least some familiarity with them, and keep my interests going and growing, and therefore perhaps I would intrigue some people to stay with me. Then, of course, the big thing that I depended upon always was integrity, because I was positive that the only way in the world a man could sell is to sell himself first. I learned that from door-to-door salesmanship long before I ever thought about radio. A man knocks on your door, and if you don't like the way he looks, the look in his eye and his manner when you first see him, you slam the door right in his face, right? Well, this radio, I reasoned, was just as intimate as that. This little instrument was there in your boudoir while the gentleman is shaving or wherever. And you were alone with it. If you weren't alone with it, you had somebody else with you. You weren't listening to it. And so I decided that I could be your companion, your confidant, the man upon whom you could, in whom you could place some trust. And the only way to do that was to live that kind of a life, and that's what I have done. The entire life has been an endless battle against a faceless, inscrutable, inhuman, callous establishment, really. Corporate structures, government, public apathy, non-involvement, permissive, submissive, demographics that make a great bunch of numbers and faceless people out of all of us. And I had to fight every inch of the way to maintain a position in this business, and to maintain the stardom after I attained it, that which I had never planned. But behind that bland facade of the great corporations, there are always some great human beings. And it was a handful of those who saw to it that I got the opportunities to do what I have done. And to list those who helped me along the way would require 50 half-hour shows like this. I'll get them all into the book. There's no use trying here. For now, as far as this particular association has been concerned, well, first of all, I think the band, the orchestra, of which now there are only three of us from the beginning, except we've got to count Ronnie, too, because that's Gene's son, and when we started, Ronnie was, what, 8, 9 years old, 10 years old? So we got to count him, too. He's been our drummer now for about 12 years, but we have to say that there are three of them. Remo Palmier, who's been my professor, my instructor, my mentor, my good friend all these years, and Gene, who stands back there with that solid basis for the whole thing. He's the one that gives us our structure with that bass fiddle or the tuba or the electric bass or whatever. And the rest of the band, most of them have been here 12, 14, 15 years. Some are newer, some not. But they're all the same ilk. They're all great musicians with a terrific sense of humor, every one of them, in his music. A man who enjoys what he's doing and who is, in his own right, a virtuoso, every single one of them. To demonstrate what I mean, boys, let's do one together, that Sensation Rag. It's a bit of Dixieland, in which every one of them will take a part. Now, I'm not going to interrupt a number and introduce each at a time, but you remember, I've got two pianos. I got Hank Jones sitting at one here, Cy Mann at the other. I took these all on extra in the last months of this show because these are the boys who came in and substituted for my own when they were ill. And we have Hal McCusick at the saxophone. We have Andy Fitzgerald on the clarinet. We have Harold J. Lieberman on the trumpet. And the man who steps in every once in a while for him was Bernie Priven, so we got him in here, too. And Billy Muir on the second guitar, he's the one that throws those wham, 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 whams in there once in a while for us. And Gene, I say, on the bass, Remo on guitar, Ronnie on the drums. And our leader for the last couple of years has been Jerry Alters. And playing the trombone in the place of the late Lou McGarrity, whom we lost less than a year ago, is Mickey Gravine, who is he's just one of the greatest, and his sense of humor is really something. If you could see a portrait that he brought me, you'd understand what I mean. I shall have it framed and keep it in my office from now on if you want to see it. But we'll do Sensation Rag. We think perhaps that will demonstrate the versatility of every one of us. Thank you. Father and Son. To miss most is playing with those guys, and it's what makes me really sick in my soul about it is that it has taken all this time to learn to do it well enough to play with them. Now, just as I'm getting so that I feel like I'm up to their standards, that's it. But perhaps we'll do some things together on TV. I hope so. Actually, this program came as a result of the gentleman who is now vice chairman of the Columbia Broadcasting System, Frank Stanton, who in those days was a little-known vice president in charge of owned and operated stations, if I remember correctly. Joe Ream had told him about me. The late Doug Coulter before that, and Harry Butcher, who later became General Eisenhower's naval aide during World War II, who had been the Washington vice president. And Frank arranged it so that I could sit down and talk to Mr. Clauber. We had a Mr. Clauber here at CBS in those days, who was running things in the absence of Bill Paley, who was on duty over in England during the war. And we had a program on called The School of the Air. Ran from 9:15 to 10 a.m. every day. And it had what we called, in those days, an LT rating. LT meaning less than 1%. I mean, there was no rating. And it was a great gesture, but nobody listened to it. It was pretty dull and dry. And they went off during the summer. And I had been trying to get this kind of thing on the network for years and years, and I could get nowhere with it. And I said to Mr. Clauber and Frank Stanton, look, give me that time, 9:15 to 10. There's no rating in there at all. I knew, of course, that I couldn't do anything but raise it a little. It was down to zero. So I said, you let me go in there for the summer, and if it doesn't work, okay, I'll quit and shut up. And so we started. And before the summer was over, the affiliates of the CBS network called in here and said, look, if you give us that School of the Air back after the summertime comes, we'll drop you. Keep Godfrey in there. And so we stayed. But it was Frank Stanton who first opened the door for me. And then later on, it was Frank Stanton who decided that, with the suggestion of Art Hayes, who was then manager of WCBS. At his suggestion, Frank put the people to work to think up an idea for me, for a gimmick, as he said, for nighttime radio. And they came up with Talent Scouts, the late Jack Carney's idea. And then later on we did, we put that on TV, and then we had the Wednesday night show, too. And we're a pretty busy guy, but there's so many people, you see, all of them belonging to this big faceless corporation, which you have to buck all the time, but within which are these great human beings. When you get to know them, whose influence is so helpful. Now, of course, in recent years, I haven't seen neither Paley or Stanton. I saw Doc Stanton the other day when we both got Peabody Awards the other day. We were at the same dais and never spoke, never got a chance to. And it saddened me a little that he's become so involved in the great, great, huge corporation conglomerate which CBS is now, and that in the early days we were very close. It saddened me a little that as we left that we weren't together. But that's the way life is, and especially in our business. In fact, I find it so in all the big corporations and in government the same way. There's a lack of humanness in it, simply because people just get too involved, too busy. But it's quite a story, and I say that unless we do something about getting back our... I'm opening an envelope the voice gave me. Unless we do something about getting back our sense of pride in craftsmanship, in patriotism, pride in our country, we're not going to leave much to our kids. Oh, this is great. Here's a card, the boys. Every one of them signed it for me. And speaking of people to whom you owe everything, that Jimmy Brown in there in the control room, who for years, very quietly, 20 years now at least, has been editing these shows. Not that long. We haven't been on tape that long. But he's been editing them, putting them together. And dear old Hoyt Grant, who even now is recovering from an operation on his eyes, who has served us, and Gus is substituting for him now, who kept us supplied with tea and tranquilizers when we got all upset. But there's one thing that I would like for you to hear as we leave. The last thing I want you to hear is the promise that I'll tell you the whole story someday, because it is a beautiful one. And from it, somebody might learn something, so maybe I'll try to tell it. I had planned today to play with Remo and Jean an arrangement that Remo made for me that I have mastered. That is to say, I can do it once in 12 times. I'll get it right. Remo, you know, who, when he first joined this little orchestra 27 years ago, had just recently won the Esquire magazine poll twice, I think, for leading guitar, jazz guitar in America. And he's taken all this time to try to teach me. But I don't have time to do that here. Maybe someday we'll do it again for you on TV. But there is one thing I want to leave with you. In 1945, we lost President Roosevelt. And I was asked, as I often had been in those days, by the network to cover the funeral. And I was often asked to do little pieces of what they used to call public events. And this is the thing, this description that I did has become famous. The late Ed Murrow included it in a record of his called Hear It Now. And everybody thinks that it was great. I myself was so ashamed of having broken down in it that I vowed I would never again do any public events, that I was not a reporter, I couldn't be objective. I had to get emotionally involved, and that was no good in our business. And so it changed the whole career. But I think it belongs here. It was the big event in 1945. Remember on the record how it goes?
He had gone down Pennsylvania Avenue many times before. This was his last trip to the White House. A city watched. A nation listened. Arthur Godfrey, an old Washington hand, described it.
The drums are wrapped in black crepe and are muffled, as you can hear. The pace of the musicians is so slow. And behind them, these are Navy boys. And now just coming past the Treasury, I can see the horses drawing the caisson. And most generally, folks having as tough a time as I am trying to see it. And behind us is the car bearing the man on whose shoulders now falls the terrific burdens and responsibilities that were handled so well by the man to whose body we're paying our last respects now. God bless him, President Truman. We return you now to the studio.
It broke me up because I had known the late president very well. And I decided that day that I must never again try to do that because I'm one of those people who cannot be objective. I get deeply personally involved in everything. And I've enjoyed every minute of it with CBS. There have been times, of course, and there have been arguments, and there have been some tough battles, but with the great sales force, with the great esprit de corps that we once had here at CBS, networks don't have it anymore. It's, no big corporation does, I guess. But it was a great joy, and I'll tell you this story someday. I'll write it for you. All I can say to you all now is thanks. Stay well and happy, and I'll be seeing you.
This is the CBS Radio Network.